You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. Now, here's Justin Fielder, Derek Stafford, and Tyler Schaefer.
Hello, and welcome to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. Justin here, along with the cousins, Derek and Tyler. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Husker Cuzcast, for all podcast updates and more. We got a great show planned tonight. We made it 2 in a row with a win over Buffalo, 28-3, and it's also Oklahoma week. It's a week that we've been waiting for a few years now. But let's talk about this Buffalo game. I guess the best way to group this game is there was a lot of good, some bad, and then there was some ugly in this game. So that's the categories that we're going to use here to break this game down. But before we do that, Tyler, what were your overall feelings on the game, how it played out?
I think it's easy to say it's Buffalo, but none of us saw this game unfolding like this. I think we talked about how 14 points for Nebraska seemed pretty generous. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I was very impressed, probably easily the best performance Nebraska's had all season.
Derek?
Well, I think you could say it's easiest the best performance only because Fordham was Fordham. That to me was the more complete game, but we were playing Fordham. It was a good game overall. I believe Tom Chattel was the one that was talking about how all these fans came in and was talking about how they wouldn't be shocked if Buffalo came in here and gave us a run for our money. And there was even a chance of an upset for Buffalo to beat Nebraska. And to come out and beat them 28-3, I think it really proved that Nebraska's on the right track. Overall, I thought it was a really good game. I thought we did most things right.
Yeah, there's a lot of good. So let's talk about this good. Tyler, give us one of your goods here.
Well, I got to start with the quarterback, Adrian Martinez. You know, a lot of people are talking about how good Adrian Martinez was on Saturday, but I would say that's just a normal game from Adrian Martinez. I mean, we see that type of performance more often than not. But to highlight a few of his stats, he went 13 for 19, which is 68%, 249 yards passing with an average completion of 12.7 yards. He had 9 carries for 112 yards. But I think what really set this game apart is he was pressured a lot on Saturday. And he looked like Eric Crouch, Taylor Martinez, being Houdini back there, just escaping pressure all day. Kept his eyes downfield, and, you know, Justin, I don't know if you're ready to eat your words yet, but he can throw downfield, and yes, he's looked damn good throwing downfield this season so far.
Yeah.
Well, just to add to that, I mean, he averaged 12.7 yards per attempt. And I mean, I know he didn't have a ton of attempts, but that's pretty damn good. And then he averaged 18.6 yards per completion. I got throwing downfield. It was good to see him doing it, too. He ran a ball very well. He had 2 touchdowns in this game. You know when the last time Adrian Martinez had 2 touchdowns in a game passing?
Was it Rutgers?
No. Maryland in 2019.
Really?
Yeah. And I have to wonder, and I'm going to sound like Justin here for a minute, but apparently Mario Verduzco is on the sideline now. So is maybe coming out of the box helping everything?
I told you guys, being up in the box is full of shit.
I did hear that, which I thought was pretty crazy that he was down the sideline. But if it's working, hey, whatever.
Yeah, he's been on the sideline all year. And Adrian Martinez was asked about that a couple weeks ago. And they wanted to ask him how he liked it. And he said, you know, he loves Mario on the field with him. And then they asked him, I was like, how did that come about? Did you request him? He goes, I don't want to get into that. So it's like, I wonder what. There's like a story there, and I'm kind of curious on what that story is. But when he says, I'm not going to get into that, it's like, well, anyway. But go ahead, Derek.
But, you know, I mean, Tyler, we talked about at the beginning of the season, we talked about limiting Adrian Martinez's carries, too. And, I mean, he only had 9 carries this game, 8 carries last game. He ran probably a little too much in the Illinois game, but the game was on the line. He probably needed to, I guess. So I think they've done a fairly good job of limiting his carries.
Well, and I think that – I know we're not going to really get into too much of this, but I think that goes into the general play calling. I've been actually fairly impressed with the play calling offensive strategy most of the season. And you talk about the 9 carries on Saturday, but half of them were not designed runs. Like, they are not they are not designing a lot of carries for Adrian Martinez. He's having to scramble. He's making plays. And the other thing about Adrian's performance on Saturday, and this is now a couple games, you know what he looks really great at is running that option. That old school Nebraska option. Like, he does a good job of inviting the defender in. He gets the pitch, and he is, you know, he doesn't pitch late. He pitches at the right moment, and he might take too much contact. Is that where you're going on that, or do you think his pitches aren't good?
His pitches seem to work out really well, but his pitches are all like 10 yards.
They're gambles. I mean, he's playing with fire. He's playing with fire on some of those.
Where I disagree with you is you're saying he doesn't pitch late. But there's been a few of them I'm like, oh, Jesus, you should have got rid of that a while ago. It's not so much the contact. There's been a few times where I was like, man, I don't know how he even got the ball to Smory Torrey on that one. I think that was against Fordham. But how he even got the ball to him is beyond me on that touchdown.
I guess what I say is, Sully, I don't think he's been, like, hit. And he hasn't. He gets hit as soon as he pitches the ball. Like, there it is. He waits the last second.
Don't get me wrong. For a guy who is not an option style quarterback, he's running the option very well. I mean, I'm not complaining. I just my gut starts to turn a little bit when I see these long pitches because it's a mistake waiting to happen.
I'm waiting for him to tuck it and run. He's pitched every single time so far. I'm waiting for him to tuck that ball and just go, and he's gonna gash some defense because. He is the best running quarterback in America.
Well, you know, in 1997, our coaches apparently had to go tell Oklahoma how to stop the option. So maybe that'll be this game here.
I've never heard that story before.
Yeah. I had never heard that story either, but I found it amazing. So maybe that'll happen this game. Like, we can just run the option all damn game.
Maybe.
Boy, run the damn ball guy would be super happy, wouldn't he?
But Justin, I want to go back to what you said. So you believe Adrian Martinez is the best running quarterback? I mean, that's high praise.
I mean, I don't know how you can argue that. I mean, what he is doing. Look, I've been critical of Adrian Martinez for the last 2 years, but this year, this is an Adrian Martinez that I did not expect that we would see.
I think this is Adrian Martinez we all expect to see in sophomore year.
Yeah, but we did, but we never saw it. And
no, we did. I'm not saying we did, but this is the Adrian we expected to see.
Yeah, but...
And it just took us 2 more years to get to it.
Well, but I will go back and say this. And again, he is definitely throwing the ball downfield better. He is running as well as he's ever ran the ball. All things, you know, a lot of things he's doing probably better than he has done. But this is the reality. And I say this, and not to be a naysayer, not to put a damper on the good section, he is going to have another not-so-good game. And he is... The problem with Adrian Martinez and the problem with this team is, can this team, like, survive a not great game from Adrian Martinez?
And the answer is no. They're not good enough to handle that.
And that's the unfair thing to Adrian Martinez, because he's going to take – there will be a game – he's going to have another fumble. I will bet he's going to fumble the ball. He's probably going to have an interception. He's going to have a poor game at some point. It just sucks that it's always all on him. And the team never, like, all the games he plays great in, it just, they don't seem to lift him up when he has his off day.
Well, I think the thing with Adrian Martinez is, can he not be Taylor Martinez? And by that, I mean, when he screws up and has that fumble or throws that interception, can he get out of his own head and just start playing good ball again? Because that was always a big concern with Taylor Martinez. Once he screwed up, he was done for the rest of the game. And I think Adrian's kind of in that same boat. Like, it seems to get in his head a little bit too easy.
I don't have any thoughts on that. I don't. I've never thought about it that way. I think he has the right mindset every game. I don't think he ever gets taken out of the game due to his, you know, what's going on in his head. I haven't seen that.
I don't mean that. I think he's too hard on himself sometimes when he makes a mistake. And he tries so hard not to make another mistake.
Well, he's playing loose right now. And you talk about the pitches, but he also had a pass on Saturday that, like, I mean.
Oh, it was the best play of the game.
The shuffle pass.
Yeah, it was the best play of the game to me. I loved it.
It was a shuffle pass 25 yards down the field, and he had a wide open Chris Hickman, but it was the right play. But that is a player that's not fear of failure. He is not playing scared right now. He is playing with the most confidence. And I think you have a point is, okay, well, will he still play at that level of confidence if he has that turnover? If that pitch gets a little bit away from him and it goes out, like, is he going to play with that same level of confidence? And also, I think a thing is it probably helps that he isn't jumping for the ball half the snaps right now. Like, he's not.
That's true. And that's a point that we've brought up for the last 2 years. Like, can he just get good snaps, and what does that do for him? I also think leaning down and not being quite the weight that he was is helping him a lot. He looks quicker. I don't know if that's making him help make better decisions, but he's making good decisions. And maybe part of that's having Verduzco on the sideline. I don't know what the answer is for that. Maybe it's just being a fourth-year starter. But he is making better decisions, I think.
Derek, what is one of the good things that you saw out of this game?
Well, let's talk about probably the best thing about this game was the defense as a whole. Man, I tell you, these guys only gave up 4.5 yards per completion. Luke Reimer was defensive player of the game, had an interception that, man, he was so close to taking in for a touchdown. I was hoping he'd get it. He just didn't quite make it there. They just completed their seventh game under 400 yards. And the last time Nebraska went seven games of not giving up more than 400 yards was 09-10 seasons. Wow. Like, it's been a long time since we've been able to do this. And so
good defenses, too.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also the least amount of points we've given up through first three games since 09. And you could talk about, well, we've only played Illinois, Fordham, and Buffalo. But there's been other years where we played some teams that, I mean, it would have been easy to do, and we just didn't do it. You know, I believe 2014, we played FAU, McNeese State, and Fresno State. Like, that's a season. That was Bo Pelini defense. That's a season you would think you'd be able to hold them down to nothing, and we didn't do it that season either. So I think it speaks volumes that they've held, you know, three teams as low as they have. And really, they're getting credited for 9 points in that Illinois game that the defense had nothing to do with. But in this particular game, man, it was phenomenal to me. We didn't give up 4.1 yards per carry, but I think that really came on about two runs. Other than that, we really shut their run game down. Only gave up 135 yards against a team that's been known to run the ball very well over the last 3 years. So how you can look at this defense and sit here and just – not be in awe of them. I mean, they're not a top 10 defense. I'm not saying that, but they are definitely exceeding my expectations on what I thought they would be this year.
Tyler, what do you think? Because you thought this defense had the ability to be a top 20 defense. Are you still on course with that?
Well, I'm back on the course, I guess, is probably a better way. Because through 2 weeks, I don't know if I saw it. But I think a lot has to do with what they did against the team they did it. Derek, you hit a little bit on Buffalo, but so Buffalo last year was fifth in the country in total offense. This we saw what they did against Mercer, which is kind of one of the reasons I think we all were puckering our butts a little bit Wagner. Heading into set.
Wagner,
sorry, whatever. What was one of the reasons why we were all a little bit scared heading in? Who played Mercer recently?
Alabama,
okay. But one of the reasons why. We were all so concerned heading into this game Saturday is because we saw that offense click. And so the fact that they played so well was quite amazing. And Buffalo, one of the areas that Nebraska did really well on Saturday was pass rush. They didn't get a lot of sacks, but they were in the backfield quite a bit. And Buffalo last season only allowed one sack and only gave up 5 quarterback hurries. And I think the stats on that are a little bit misleading. We've talked about that, but like what exactly we finished with pass hurries. According to Sean Callahan and Pro Football Focus, we had I just had that open and I lost it.
Well, on JoJo Doman's podcast, The Beat, I think it's called, Sean Callahan says that we hurried the quarterback 21 times. Now, ESPN has it at 7. I've seen another stat somewhere where it said I think it was 15. So, I mean, take your pick, I guess.
Yeah. I think his stat was 21 pressures.
Okay. What's the difference?
Shit if I know. I don't know.
It depends. Ben Stilley was a very big part of it. He played really well in the backfield. Damian Daniels has played really well at that nose guard position. I mean, I think across the board, played really well. And my last thing is, Derek, you hit Luke Reimer. He was the guy that I circled last week in the preparation saying he needs a big game. He had it. He was not only our player of the game, he was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. A really, really great showing for the Blackshirts on Saturday.
Well, and Nick Henrich had a really good game. Like both our inside linebackers. Barrett Root is doing a phenomenal job for a guy who's the least paid coach on the staff. And a guy that we all kind of went, he is the best candidate. I tell you what, for a guy who's missing his stud linebacker and Will Honus, he's really doing a good job with the three he has.
Yeah, and I do want to name one more guy because I don't think we've brought him up really this whole season is Caleb Tanner.
He had a good game too. He's come around to be a really good rusher.
But it was for a bad thing.
Well, yeah, we brought him up for the bad. But he's actually had besides that really bad play, which, again, whatever, on the roughing the passer against Illinois, but he has had a really good season and had another good game on Saturday. Again, Justin's boy Deontay Williams continues to have a hell of a year. Yeah. I know Cam Taylor-Britt special teams has not been pretty, but he played 80-some snaps on Saturday. He was targeted 7 times and only gave up 3 completions. I mean,
is Deontay Williams the best defender in the secondary this year?
He's proven to be right now. Can he keep it up? I don't know, but yeah, right now he looks like he is. I don't know what Travis Fisher is. Preach to these guys. I mean, I'm sure he's preached it, but the tackling's been better. You don't see a lot of launching. You don't see.
He's a ball.
We haven't had. I mean, we're not getting helmet to helmet contact. They're just playing good ball right now.
He's all over.
That's
the
a great
field.
Call out, Derek. I didn't even think about that, but they've been tackling really well. And again, the launching, that was a criticism last year, especially out of the safeties. And again, so just to your question, I mean, I think. Yeah, if you have to say through 3 games, I think definitely Deontay Williams is leading the pack right now. I mean, I don't know if I'm quite ready to put him ahead of Cam Taylor-Britt. We'll give another game or two, but he's played the best so far this year.
Well, I guess we'll know a lot more next week because we're about to play a very good passing team next week. So I guess we can hold off on the praise till next week. I want to get my good in for the game, and that's got to be Samori Toure. What a game he had. He only had 2 receptions, but they were both for TDs, 136 yards, including a 68-yarder. He now has over 300
yards.
268 yarders. 268? Okay, yeah, you're right. And he has 306 receiving yards on the year. Now,
not to interrupt you, but don't forget he also had another touchdown. It was like a 30-yard touchdown that was called back for a bogus offensive pass interference, which we'll get to that portion later. But, I mean, the guy touched the ball 3 times and should have had 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. I mean, he is playing lights out. When he came to Nebraska out of Montana, I kind of had concerns how his that elite status at FCS would translate at Nebraska. And wow, he is the real deal. We had talked before the season if we would have a receiver have 1,000 yards receiving. Well, he's on pace to do that, Tyler. I don't know if any of us saw a 1,000-yard receiver, but if someone's going to get there, it's going to be Toure. I mean, that dude means a lot to this wide receiver room.
Derek? I think what he is to me is what I thought Kunivainoa was going to be when he transferred from Cal. Like, I had big aspirations for that guy, and he never panned out. And Samori Torrey, when he came in from Montana, I had high aspirations for him, but not like I did Kunivainoa. And, man, he is just – he's lighting it up. And I tell you, Oklahoma's secondary is a little suspect, and he may have a pretty big game against him. But I don't want to jump ahead, but we're talking about him, so I'm going to talk about him. I mean, it's Adrian Martinez's go-to guy, I think. The difference between him and, like, a Wandell Robinson is he's his go-to guy, but he doesn't have to go to him 10 times a game. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's still a guy. It's his relief valve. And it's working out well. He gets open. He runs crisp routes. When he gets the ball in open field, he makes some good moves. He knows where to run to get away from defenders. You know, on that first touchdown, right before the first half ended, he caught the ball in stride, which was a great throw by Adrian Martinez. But when he cut to the left there and just kept going left to get away from that defender, it was the only spot to run. It was the smartest spot to run. A lot of guys would have just tried to run upfield. And I think if he had run upfield, he probably would have got caught by the defender. But once he started running diagonally, there was just no – because he never had to stop stride at all. So there was no chance for that defender to ever catch him. So he's pretty fast, even. I mean, for a 6'3 guy, pretty damn quick.
Tyler, thoughts on Toure?
I think you guys hit it all. Really good start to the year. Has done, you know, carrying the ball a little bit. We've seen not so much Saturday, but he's done it all over. Yeah, I mean, he is the real deal right now.
All right, let's transition to the bad. We did have some bad things that showed up in this game. Tyler, what is your bad?
Well, I got to start with the offensive line. Guys, this position group has really been struggling. It's been three games now. They could not generate any sort of holes. I talked about Adrian Martinez being Houdini. Well, he had to because Buffalo was in the backfield all day. And I expected the struggle early in the year, and you know, to my not surprise, he has.
Yeah, I'll
disagree with you a little bit. I thought the pass blocking was okay. It was far from great, but it was okay. There were a lot of throws. Adrian Martinez had plenty of time to throw. There were plenty of times where he was pressured and had to run it. I mean, it was kind of a little bit of both. The run blocking, though, is just garbage. Like, it is just terrible.
When are we going to be able to run with running backs?
When we can make a hole between tackles? Like, the only chance we have of running a ball right now is running the option and getting to the outside. We can't run it. We can't run through the tackles for nothing. If we do, we're getting maybe 2 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Like, it's bad. Like, the run blocking is just bad from this group right now.
Derek, what is your bad?
My bad, I'm going to go with the running back rotation. And I said at the beginning of the year, I thought we need, by the time we got to Oklahoma, we needed to know who our guy was. Well, here we are heading into Oklahoma, and I still don't know who the hell our guy is. And I know Tyler was okay with the running back rotation or running back by committee type of thing, but it's just not working. Like, Gabe Irvin had the best game so far. I mean, he did have 2 touchdowns, which is awesome. But he ran 10 times for 56 yards. That's not great. Sevian Morrison had 8 carries for 24 yards. That's not great. 3 yards a carry, really? And then Marquise Stepp had 9 carries for 17 yards. And I don't know. The guy ran for 101 yards last week. And this week, he had some carries on the first drive of the second half and never came back in the game. He clearly wasn't hurt because he was in the weight room as soon as the game was over. So it wasn't an injury related. Apparently the staff just didn't like how he was running the ball that game. I don't know, but we just need to figure something out with these running backs. And part of it is on the offensive line. Like, make some holes for these guys. But at some point, too, I mean, these running backs need to do a little something to help themselves, too. Make a juke. Get around some guys. Do something.
So, Tyler, Gabe Irvin, he starts the first 2 games. Marquise Stepp, he gets the start against Buffalo. Who starts this week at running back?
I'm going Marquise Stepp. You know, I think that he has been more impressive through 3 games. Now, I will say Gabe Irvin, I mean, you know, he had his best game as a Husker. He had a 20-yard run. He ran hard. There's that clip on Twitter in that when he just bulldozed the guy. Like, he is beginning to play it hard. So, last week I talked about he advocating not benching him. I know there were some people talking about that. I was like, you got to keep him in the game, get him some carries. But I'm still going Marquise Stepp. But I will defend the rotation this way. It was hot, and no one was getting any momentum. That seemed like a game that rotating the backs was probably a good idea. We do need to figure out something. How we rotate the backs, I don't know if I have the right recipe, but we need more out of that position group for sure.
I thought Gabe Irvin killed that dude.
He laid him out.
Man, that was the hardest hit I've seen a running back hit at Nebraska since Eric Crouch laid that Iowa defender out. like he just laid him out. It was amazing to watch. I just wish he could have kept running after that.
Yeah, he gets taken down a little bit too easy sometimes. All right, my bad is going to go to the penalties. 9 penalties for 71 yards. And, you know, there's a little bit of everything there. You know, you had an offsides, a false start, a holding, 2 delay of games, personal foul, defensive pass interference, and a couple others that are kind of, you know, iffy, to put it, like, lightly, I guess. Penalties need to be cleaned up. And, you know, we're not really consistent. There's some games where... You know, we don't have a lot of penalties, but there's a lot of games where we do have a lot of penalties. And I know the officiating wasn't great. They were throwing laundry right and left in this one. But, you know, it didn't affect us in this game, the outcome. But some of those are drive killers, you know. That's.
I'll say this. I think this year as a whole, where, you know, Justin, you mentioned before the podcast, we're 25% done with this season. And, you know. Really, this is the one bad game. Like, and I'm hoping this is an anomaly, but it was bad that we had 9 penalties. But we're 41st in the country, only averaging 5 penalties a game. So that's a huge improvement over last year. Yeah. So again, we're only 25% through the season, but man, it's hard to. When you see calls as bad as we've seen in this, we'll get to that in the ugly. It's hard to get too hard on him for penalties, but at the end of the day, you just can't have 9 penalties. You just can't. All right, well, not against good teams. You can do it against Buffalo, whatever, but you can't do that against Oklahoma. Yeah. Because our offense is not explosive enough to overcome those penalties.
Or most of the defense, Big Ten teams that we're going to play.
Yeah. And our defense is as good as it is. It's not good enough to just shut down a team after a big stop. Or, you know, you get a big stop and then you have a penalty that continues a drive. We don't have, our defense isn't so good that we could just go, oh, well, we can recover from this. It's every time we get these penalties, all of a sudden this team start driving down the field. Or opposite for offense. We start driving down the field, we get these penalties, and it just stops. And I think that's where the concerning part is. But, again, 9 penalties is inexcusable.
All right.
Especially after you just had a week where you only had 2 penalties.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the ugly, Tyler.
Well, I apologize. I couldn't remember which one was mine, so I might take someone else's here. But I'm going to go right on the same subject we were talking about, the refs. You talked about the ugliness of the penalties. Well, there were some pretty bad calls in that game. You know, you have that two. You talked about Adrian Martinez having two passing touchdowns. Well, he should have had four passing TDs. That one they called back on Samori Torrey on the offensive pass interference was just an awful call. Whenever you call in New York and they don't agree with the refs, you know that's not a good sign. The holding call they called on Bryce Benhart on the Xavier Betts touchdown was just a really, really questionable call. I won't say it was a terrible call, but I've seen that not called for holding more often than not. It wasn't like he tackled him. He didn't have his arms around him. You know, it was definitely a close call.
Yeah, Damon Benning agreed with him on the broadcast. That's our guy, so.
I think it was a close.
I think I've seen way worse holding calls get let go.
Yes.
Than that one. I thought that was a little ticky-tacky,
but
it was a holding penalty.
Yeah, I mean, well, and again, the offensive pass interference, like, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, well, was it or could it have been, like, I suppose maybe, but it just seemed like there were some tick-tacky calls. You know, the last touchdown of the game that got called back, which was Will Nixon, which would have been cool for his moment to get a touchdown. Again, that was right on that border of forward pass. Again, some very questionable calls on Saturday. And the refs did it both ways. I think Buffalo got probably had a couple calls questionable on them, too. Just really ugly officiating.
I'll tell you one of the worst calls of the whole game, to me at least, was the sideline unsportsmanlike conduct that we had a late hit. I thought it was a late hit. Yeah. The announcers thought it was a late hit. And suddenly the referees are calling it on the sideline for unsportsmanlike conduct. The refs were terrible.
Yeah.
The last field goal to end the game, which, I mean, didn't matter. But if you watch that, it's over the top of the upright, but it looks like it's a good field goal. They still called it no good.
Did they review that one?
No, they did not. Now maybe, just maybe, if you're not Connor Culp out there missing field goals like a drunk man misses a toilet, maybe, just maybe, you get the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, let's talk about special teams there, Derek. You brought it up.
All right. It was just ugly. I mean, Tierney had himself probably his best game, but he still only averaged 36 yards a punt. He punted five times, 180 yards. He did put three inside the 20, though. And he put that one on the two-yard line, which was pretty damn good. But overall, it was just – he just doesn't have a very good leg, I don't think. Our kickoffs continue to be good. We had, I think, three out of five touchbacks on our kickoffs. But as I mentioned, our field goal kicker, who was all Big Ten last year, can't seem to find out which direction he's punting the ball. So that doesn't help. The one good thing, I guess, I'd come out of out of Nebraska's special teams is, man, we're pretty good about not letting people get field goals on us. Our opponents are 1-for-6 on field goals against us right now. And so, I guess it's a positive, but it's not like we're blocking them. So, I apparently we're just facing some bad kickers. I don't know.
Well, I want to talk about the kickers. Connor Culp, he's 1-for-4 on field goals 30 yards or longer. He's had, you know, the three field goals missed this game, and he's had two missed extra points in the first game. Does he have the yips? Is it time to try somebody else different at field goal kicker, Derek?
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Here's my thing. Like, I hate to think that this all Big Ten kicker all of a sudden just doesn't know how to kick a ball. But two games, he's looked pretty bad. Two out of three games, he's looked bad.
Yeah. Tyler, what do you think?
So
To me, he earned a little bit of a leash after his performance last year. So I would roll him out against Oklahoma. You know, you talk about the yips. I mean, that is a possibility. The question was, is that a in the moment of a couple games, or is that just going to be a trend? While I do give him a little bit longer leash and I do put him out against Oklahoma, I mean, at this point, the leash is almost done. You know, similar to probably maybe the next spot is Cam Taylor-Britt. Like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to put those guys out there. Cam Taylor-Britt's probably a little bit closer to being done than Connor Culp is. But, yeah, I'm rolling out Connor Culp. I mean, here's the thing. If the coaches believe, if they're in practice and they're like, yeah, we've got another kicker that could be all conference, then I think the answer is simple. But what I don't want to see is you're going to be in the biggest game of the season and you're going to put out a kicker for the first time and that's why you lose the game. Like, if I'm going to lose because of a kick, I would want it to at least be with somebody that I've had some kind of big game experience, some sort of moments. Hopefully it doesn't come down to that either way. But I give Connor Culp another game and hopefully he does that.
I don't think it has anything to do with, like, having an all-conference kicker this year. Because that's out the window with Connor Culp. He's not going to get it. They need to find somebody that they can actually trust to put on the field when you need to kick a field goal 40 yards. Because
I don't want to see what we did in 2019 where it's like every game we're rolling out another kicker. And so if they're going to make the change...
We don't need to see five different kickers get attempts.
I mean, we're not. I mean, so if we're going to roll out another kicker, I think there needs to be, again, somewhat of an understanding that, okay, you're putting a new guy in, and if he shanks one, it's not going to be like, well, put Connor Culp back in. Like, if he has struggling kicking 40 plus yards, and you need to put in a little bit bigger boot and try something, maybe, but. Again, I think Connor Culp, what he did last year, kickers miss kicks. I said that stat, like, Oklahoma has a really good kicker. Last year, he had four straight games missing a field goal. Like, kickers miss kicks from time to time. Like,
do they go 0-for?
No, I mean, not very often.
Oklahoma kicker, because I think he's going to be one of the best kickers. We're going to talk about him.
But Iowa State, I mean, Iowa State's kicker, I just pulled up two good teams. Iowa State's kicker had a game. He went 0-for-2. I know Connor Culp went 0-for-3, which is worse. I'm just saying, like, kickers miss kicks from time to time. Like, I am not a always, well, got to put the next guy, not the bench. Like, especially when you have a guy who is somewhat been proven.
So what is the difference between, like, putting another kicker in, between kicker and then, like, a punt returner? What's the difference between swapping them out? They're both specialists, right? So if they're gonna swap out punt returners willy nilly, different guys, why can't you do that to kickers or your field goal kicker? If he's not succeeding, if he's not doing all the right things, what harm does it do to put in another kicker?
You know, that's a fair point. Why not switch quarterback every play like you do? I mean, like every series, put a different quarterback in, like you do running back. Like, or wide receivers. Wide receivers rotate 5-6 times in a series.
If quarterbacks only came onto the field 3 or 4 plays a game, then I would agree. But for the 3 or 4 plays a game, if they're not being consistent, I don't know what the harm is, unless you have no trust in the backups. But it'd be kind of hard to be a kicker at Nebraska and seeing the guy get the starts and he's not making any field goals. He's missing the easy ones. He can't make anything over 30 yards. He's missing them. And so it's like, wow, what's going on right there? It's puzzling. I mean, it hasn't hurt us yet in a game, but it's going to hurt us down the road if he doesn't fix it. And I mean, until he gets it straight, I mean, I'm not opposed to seeing somebody else.
Well, of course you're not. You always like to see new players. And you always like to bet. You're the first one to want to bench everyone. And
what? I mean, why are you okay with mediocrity or failure? Why are you so accepting of failure?
I guess I'm not okay with failure or mediocrity. I just, to me, like when you have a guy who's accomplished something, two bad games isn't like enough for me.
Out of three.
But, I mean, look at the scope of his career. I mean, again, I know you don't want to count last year at all. It's last year. It doesn't matter. But again, I think that heading into Oklahoma, like, I'm going to go with a guy that I have a little bit more, some sort of big game experience, some sort of moment if I'm going out there. And again, if he shanks the very first field goal, like, okay, let's give it another shot. But
if it was too hard for him to kick field goals in Lincoln at home, what is his psyche going to be being on the road in a hostile environment?
And the coaches need to evaluate that, right? Like the coaches, if they're sitting there and they don't believe his head's in it, if he does have the yips, he's shanking them all week in practice, like, okay, then they need to judge that. I think he'll rebound and be okay.
Can we just start calling Connor Culp the weatherman? Like, he's all right half the time.
Well, you know, 40% of the time he's made one. All right, so final thing of the ugly here. I'm just going to talk about the heat. We talked about briefly, near 100 degrees, but 131 degrees on the field. Now, Tyler, you were there at the game. You were inside the stadium, but you were outside tailgating for the whole game. How hot was it out there?
Yeah, it was hot. I mean, I was fortunate to be in the shade and had beer in my hand the whole game, but you know, it was a hot one. My wife said she kind of blacked out. It was warm.
What was hotter, Illinois or this game?
Well, I wasn't in the shade all of Illinois. I
would guess this game was hotter.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate not to be out in the sun. Illinois sure felt hotter because I was in the sun the whole day, but yeah, I hard to say.
All right, let's talk about Oklahoma here. Big game, 50th anniversary of the game of the century, 11 a.m. on Fox on Saturday. It's the Fox's big noon kickoff, I guess. This is a game we've been waiting for years. It's been on the schedule. Can't wait for it. Your overall thoughts, Tyler?
I mean, Oklahoma's good. I mean, I had them, you know, set for the playoff. There isn't probably a team on the schedule that can challenge Nebraska, you know, but there is a little bit of jury out on Oklahoma. They did not look impressive against Tulane. They almost lost that game. They will not face another defense like this Nebraska team. I do think this might be the best defense they face, or at least among the best defenses they're going to face the whole rest of the season. So while there's a lot for Nebraska to prove, I think that Oklahoma's got some things to prove on Saturday going against the Blackshirts.
Almost losses, kind of. That's a little bit of a stretch, but they were in
They won by five, and Tulane had the ball. They got the ball with, and they had the ball at the end of the game. They did.
2 minutes. 2 minutes left when that fourth down. He scrambled. Yeah. I mean,
that's towards it. Okay. They had the ball near the end of the game with a shot, with a shot to pull ahead. Under 2 minutes left, they had the ball down 5 points. So,
but not almost losing. I mean, it's like at midfield.
Well, I mean, to Tyler's point, though, they only scored 3 points in the second half. Yeah. So she didn't have a lot of confidence that if Tulane goes ahead, that they're just going to drive down the field and score.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Just, I don't know if I'd call an almost loss. But I would call it an embarrassing win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nebraska, we would be pissed at that game. I mean,
Oklahoma fans, they were too. I listened to a couple of Oklahoma podcasts. I watched that game today, the Oklahoma-Tulane game. And that first half, I mean, Oklahoma, they looked good. They're fast. Their receivers are good. Real good. And, you know, they jumped out to a 37-14 lead. And they came out at halftime, and they looked like shit. I mean, they forgot to come out of the locker room.
And here's the problem. Like, they had three fumbles recoveries away from Tulane. I mean,
that second quarter,
winning almost every – they were winning most of the aspects of this game and somehow forgot to put them away.
Yeah. Well, all those fumbles came in the second quarter. That defense was good for Oklahoma. They were whooping up on Tulane
But here's my thing. Like, you can't afford to do that against Nebraska if you're Oklahoma. Like, you should be able to beat Nebraska. I'm not going to sit here and say that they shouldn't. But if you make mistakes like that against Nebraska, I mean, Spencer Rattler had a couple interceptions in the game. You can't score more than 3 points against Tulane in a whole half. You do that against Nebraska, you're in jeopardy of losing that game, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get too deeper into this, I got to say, are you guys tired of all the reporters asking the players on what their thoughts on the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry is? I mean,
I don't know what I expected them to say. I mean, I think I'm getting the answer that I expected, where it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a history there. We're focused on Saturday, Oklahoma. Like, I mean, we haven't. I'm 35 years old. In my lifetime, the Oklahoma Nebraska game hasn't been the Oklahoma Nebraska game. Like, right. I mean, like exactly. That. I mean, when the Big 12 started, that was done. But even before the Big 12 starting, like the 90s, that wasn't a rivalry. Right. Like the rivalry by 88 was pretty much dead because Nebraska just surpassed Oklahoma.
I mean, me and Derek, we're some old fogies here, but you know, I mean, we were still in elementary school when that stuff was going on, when the rivalry was there. So our memories of it, I don't know, maybe it's just something that you think you had good memories of it as a kid, but I don't know if I have. I mean, I remember Brian Bosworth as a kid because I remember being on the playground. People would call each other Brian Bosworth and want to be Brian Bosworth. But
I remember Brian Bosworth more for getting run over by Bo Jackson than I remember him for anything else.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I watched a Brian Bosworth movie today called Phase 4. Have you ever heard of it? Me neither. Never. Until today.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it was mildly entertaining. I mean, it's on Amazon if you want to check it out. It's pretty cheesy.
Was it better than the Killer Donuts?
Oh, Attack of the Killer Donuts. Man, are we going to make this a movie segment here?
We're recording a podcast, guys.
All right. So for the listeners out there, you got two movies to watch. Attack of the Killer Donuts. And Phase 4 with Brian Bosworth. Let us know which movie's better.
And for the rest of them out there, I ain't watching it either. So don't feel bad when you don't watch it. You know, but yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, this rivalry to me, I don't know. I remember the talk of the rivalry. I remember everybody talking about what the rivalry was. I remember one of my mom's friends used to have a light switch in her house. And the cover of it said, Nebraska turns me on and Oklahoma turns me off. I remember a lot of hatred for the Oklahoma. But to me, in my Husker days of really paying attention to Husker football, it was more Colorado. Because in the 90s, the Colorado was the one giving us problems. And then once the Big 12 started, it was Colorado we played on Thanksgiving or the day after. And So to me, yeah, most of my memories of Oklahoma are seeing replays and hearing uncles talk about what the rivalry was.
Hey, Derek, do you remember the Nebraska-Oklahoma game in 2000? I just got out of the Army. You were still in the Army. Nebraska loses that game.
I don't remember much of it.
And you were drunk, and you called me, and you were crying because our season was over that year.
I was drunk.
Oh, my God. That was a great moment. That was probably the most memorable part.
But you know, that was back when Nebraska football meant something. Back in those days, if Nebraska lost, my day was ruined.
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, it was over if Nebraska lost. Like, I was just getting drunk. That was it. That was the rest of my day.
Yeah. Tyler, you're trying to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, I looked up a little bit of stuff, and I reflected a little bit on the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry. And I kind of just want to, you know, where this came from, a lot of it was the 70s and 80s. And obviously they're talking about the game of the century part two. And this was when you had 1-2. You know, Johnny Jet Rogers early in the first quarter sealed the Heisman with the punt return. But that rivalry really got big for Nebraska. I think a lot of the hatred came after Devaney retired. Because the history lesson on Oklahoma-Nebraska is Osborne couldn't beat Oklahoma. he flat out couldn't beat him until 78. He finally beats Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma was number one at the time. Osborne finally beats Oklahoma. And then what happens? We get Oklahoma in a bowl game, and Oklahoma beats us again. And so there was just, we couldn't get Oklahoma off our bat. Obviously, the 80s came, early 80s, when you had the scoring explosion, really good games against Oklahoma. I mean, that's really the when Switzer retired or Switzer left Oklahoma, the rivalry hasn't been the same since then.
Right. Yeah, we thought we were going to get it there in 2000, 2001. Those were some pretty good games then. But, you know, Nebraska was good then. Both teams were good back then.
That was like the only other window, basically, after Switzer was that 2000, 2001. Obviously, the 2001 game, I mean, we're getting way into history here, but was the Mike Stuntz, the Eric Crouch pass. I think that was the game of the century. That was a 30-year anniversary of the game of the century. It was a classic. Maybe the 50-year, we get another classic on Saturday.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? That would be great to have something that memorable. Well,
we're 2-0. We're 2-0 in the anniversaries. We got the game of the century won, 30-year we won. Let's go 50-year.
Let's go 50-year. So let's talk about the keys to the game here. What are Nebraska's keys to the game here, Derek?
Oh, man, I tell you, this is going to be a tough game for Nebraska. I tell you guys, I think the key to me is you're going to have to find a way to really pressure Spencer Rattler. You're going to have to keep pressure on him, because if you keep pressure on him, he can make mistakes. I'm not saying he will, but he can make mistakes. As I spoke of earlier, he threw two interceptions against Tulane. And I think our defense, our secondary is good enough to pick some balls off from him if he can make those mistakes. But the only way he's making those mistakes is if you can keep pressure on him. And it's not impossible to do. They have a good offensive line. But it's not so great that I don't think you can get pressure on him. The other thing is going to be establishing a run on offense. And it's going to have to come from other than Adrian Martinez. It really is. What I'd really like to see out of that is, can we get some counters and some misdirection runs instead of straight up the middle or options to the sides? Let's get some misdirection going. See if we can fool this defense, because their defensive front is strong.
Yeah.
Their secondary is a little suspect, but their defensive front is strong.
Well, Derek, I just want to go on that. You talk about their defensive front being strong, and they are talented, but they're not big. They're starting, I pulled up their depth chart, 266, 292, 283. They run a three-man front. I mean, they're not big.
No, but they're fast.
They're athletic. They are very athletic, but they're not big. And so that kind of goes to what I would like to see. You know, and this will go into one of my number one key, or one of my main keys, is I'd like to see some power. There's some speculation in fall camp that Yant had been taking some snaps at fullback. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of eye formation, especially where I'm going to go with some of the injuries. Like, we need to maybe find some different guys so we're not rolling out a bunch of walk-on wide receivers on Saturday. I think this is a really good game. It could be a nice little wrinkle to maybe run 15, 20 plays with a fullback in there, get a little bit more power and just go downhill at them with step at running back. That's why I like step at running back. Yawn at fullback, I think you can maybe wear him down. But so that to establishing a run, that's how I'd like to see it. But my key to the victory is how healthy is Nebraska on the outside. And this is tight end and wide receivers. Heading into this game, Austin Allen, Travis Vokolek, Oliver Martin, Omar Manning, and Xavier Betts are all questionable. Like, you will not win this game. The key to this game is going to be determined a lot before kickoff if none of those guys play. You will not win this game, because what you'll do if you're Oklahoma, if you're smart, is you'll have a spy on Adrian and you'll have a safety over the top of Samari Torrey. And that's what you'll do, and you'll say, dare Nebraska to beat you. And if that's
the case, I hope Will Nixon and Alante Brown get a ton of playing time and just tear it up.
Well, they'll have to, because due to attrition, they're the next man up.
I mean, yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll probably see Levi Falk and Wyatt Lever instead.
Well, probably. But, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I think you'll see a little bit of Alante prep. But point is, I think a lot of the key of this game is going to be decided before kickoff on, or as kickoff emerges on who's actually going to be healthy enough to show up to Norman.
So I think we alluded to this in the beginning of the episode, talking about Adrian Martinez and what he means to the team. You know, success rides with him. Running the ball, over or under 15 and a half runs. What do you want to see Adrian Martinez run, Tyler?
I'd go under for a lot of reasons. And there is a little bit of long-term ramifications about running him 15 times. I also think that while you may call Adrian Martinez the best running quarterback in the country, and maybe he is, I think Oklahoma's defense is the wrong team for Adrian Martinez to run against because they are quick. He might be able to get away with some outrunning linebackers against Northwestern and Illinois and Buffalo, and he'll outrun a lot of people. Oklahoma's defense is going to be able to go sideline to sideline with him. And if you're having to run him 16 times, like I really wonder if you're just beating him up for probably not your most successful play. So I would like the under in that.
Derek, what do you think?
I honestly don't care either way. If it's successful, run it. What I want to see, though, is I don't want to see him take 15 or 16 hits. Like, slide. Get out of bounds. Do what you got to do to not take the hit.
Has he ever slid?
He's averaging. Oh, yeah, many times. I mean, it's not his first go-to move, but he's done it plenty of times.
I guess I don't recall him sliding.
But if he's averaging 12 yards a carry, there's no reason not to do it, which is what he averaged last game. And I understand he's not going to do that probably this game. But if for whatever reason he is, there's no reason not to run him. Like, if you want to win this game, it's like they say in The Waterboy, you got to pull out all stops. Like, well, you can't hold anything back, I think is what he says like 15 times during the Bourbon Bowl. But I mean, at the end of the day, you got to do what's working. And if it's working, running him, I think you have to continue to do it. Now, if it's not working, don't continue to do it, obviously. There's no reason to run 15 times if he's only getting 2 or 3 yards a carry.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think he gives us our best chance to run the ball. I mean, he has been our whole rushing offense through 3 games so far. He's it. The running backs, they damn sure haven't been doing it. It doesn't matter if you pick one running back or if you add every single running back.
Marquise Stepp had a 100-yard rushing
game.
He
did. I mean, Martinez had 2, right? So, I mean, he gives us our best shot.
I think you're right. He gives us our best shot. I just wouldn't say he is the only option to run the ball.
I mean, if you're counting Marquise Stepp's performance against Fordham and trying to translate that into Oklahoma, then I'm just going to disagree.
Again, I think if you can get some misdirection and get that defensive line going one way and run the other, I think running backs can be successful. But I haven't seen hardly any misdirection plays this year. I don't understand it. I really, truly don't. It's either running up the gut or it's Adrian running.
We saw a little bit against Buffalo in the second half. Saw a little bit, maybe in the fourth quarter.
A little bit, but it was actually a brilliant play. The one that comes to mind was the brilliant play when we ran the counter option.
Yeah.
Where the running back and a quarterback. And it was probably our most successful running play of the day.
Yeah.
Well, that misdirection can do a lot for a team. That's especially a team that's struggling on offensive line.
So what you guys kind of hit a lot of stuff there, and all the stuff I agree with on the keys to victory. But to me, it really does go with the black shirts. So one thing, you know, Scott Frost has definitely taken his fair criticism throughout the time. But one thing that Scott Frost does almost on a daily game basis, and we've seen it overall, he calls some really good, unique plays from time to time. That just get some really good matchups, and they can be big chunk plays. You know, the play on Saturday with Samori Torrey that we got the offensive pass interference with, Torrey was literally open because of the misdirection of getting him out there. I mean, you see Frost dial these up a couple times. I think he can do that on Saturday. Here's the thing. I just don't think we're going to score 35 points. I just don't see that a reality where we score 35 points. So if Nebraska wants any shot to win this game, they're going to have to do exactly what they did to Buffalo and exceed all of my expectations of what's real. Like, they are going to have to go out there and they're going to have to hold them in the 20s and hope that maybe you can get some sort of running game at the running backs or Adrian Martinez, and Frost can pull two or three really good play calls, and hopefully you have enough weapons to execute those play calls and get enough offensive production to be able to be in this game. I mean, that's really what you're hoping for.
You are exactly right, Tyler, because our offense is not good enough to win a shootout against Oklahoma. They will win every single time.
Yes.
The defense, they need to do their part, and they've been doing a great job so far this year. They need to put the team in a position to win the game. Just, you know, hold them to a certain amount of points where our offense can get there. The defense, they're going to... Derek, you were talking about the two interceptions that Spencer Rattler had against Tulane. We're going to need to force some turnovers. We're going to need some great help by Deontay Williams. Hopefully he adds a couple more of this game. And, you know, that would put us in the game. What I fear in this game is what could come back to hurt us is our late starts. Through three games, we've had some sluggish starts. And our offense isn't good enough. If Oklahoma, if they jump out to a three-score lead early, our offense isn't built to come back from that, not against Oklahoma.
No, but what I will say about that is our defense has not allowed a touchdown in the first or fourth quarters so far this year.
I mean, have we played an offensive juggernaut yet?
No, but what I'm saying is don't count out our defense for being able to shut some stuff down too.
Well, I mean, that's fair, but I mean, the offense still needs to get in there.
Well, just
here's where I think our offense needs to do. And this is not something that Scott Frost has done well at all since he's been here. I think this is a game that you have to control the clock. Like, this, if there's ever a game where you want to slow things down, this is it. Keep your offense on the field. Run the ball. You know, go for some shots downfield. That's fine. Keep your offense on the field as much as you can. Keep their offense off, because that's your best opportunity to win this game, is to keep their offense off the field.
Yeah. And can we do that with our run game?
Well, it's not just run game. Intermediate passes. I mean, I know that that's not sexy, and we want to see Adrian take shots down the field, but he has traditionally looked fairly accurate in the middle of the field, that 7 to 12 yard range. Again, the problem is that route is really been designed a lot for the tight ends, and who knows, even Chris Hickman was banged up in that game. I don't think his injury is near severe, but like who are we putting out there? Are we putting walk-ons out there? Cause again, that's going to be they have to be able to catch the ball in close counters, and that's where you want Austin Allen and Travis Vokolek out there for.
I got one more key of the game before you move on, Justin, is, and this is a big one. This is probably the biggest one of all. Can special teams not kill us?
Oh my God. This is the,
you know, our special teams has as many turnovers as our offense does.
Yeah.
And so I don't expect special teams to be great. I don't expect to make some big 180 turn and be a great special teams. Just don't kill us. Just don't kill us. Don't turn a ball over. Don't muff a punt. Right. You know, maybe our punter can get a few decent punts, and don't miss your extra points and your field goals.
Yeah, and make all field goals inside 45. I mean, if you're inside 45, you have to make those field goals.
I asked this question earlier about Connor Culp. If you want to see him, do you want to see Cam Taylor Britt line up at punt returner in this game?
I don't have a problem with it. As far as the turnover on against Buffalo, dude, it hit a guy that was getting blocked. It didn't hit Cam Taylor Britt. As a matter of fact, the guy getting blocked ran into Cam Taylor Britt. That play was not his fault. He's had two really bad plays the safety and the muff punt against Fordham. I'm not willing to just totally give up on
him.
Does
he have the same percentage as Connor Culp on special teams as punt returner? As far as
I mean, it's just a dumpster fire. Like, the whole special teams is a dumpster fire. And for you to sit here and blame only Cam Taylor-Britt and Connor Culp is amazing to me, because it's just the whole.
Those are the two guys. Yeah,
but there's no blocking scheme on punt returns. There's no blocking scheme, good blocking scheme on kickoff returns. There's no. Connor Culp is what Connor Culp is. Like, that's fine. You want to blame him, I get it. But our punter is not great. Like, there's so many fingers. I don't have enough fingers to point at everybody you could blame for special teams right
now. So, Justin, I have a question on the Cam Taylor-Britt thing. I just want to poise you. Okay, and this is a hypothetical. But hypothetically, let's say Cam Taylor-Britt is your best home run shot at special teams. Okay? He is your best shot to make a big play on punt return. Okay? Is the risk reward, is that a situation why you'd want to pay Cam Taylor-Britt?
Well, so far we haven't seen that high reward yet.
But if that is, because again, Samori Torrey has said in an interview he has not fielded a punt since high school. If Oliver Martin is still not healthy, like, are you confident Samori Torrey, who has only he has done on a punt return is fair caught a ball in 7 years on punt return? We've seen Cam Taylor-Britt, albeit last year, have some success returning a punt for plays. Is this a game where, like, I get all the failures and I get that the reasons are, but don't you need to take every shot to make the big play?
I guess if you're playing from behind and you need to make that big play, then yes. But if you're if it's still a game, I don't think you put a guy that's a liability out there. I mean, I think you just take the fair catch and, you know, turn it over to the offense.
I guess to me, I think if we're going to win this game Saturday, we're going to need a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown. I do not see a scenario, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm as wrong as I thought Buffalo was going to score 24 points. But I just don't see a scenario where Nebraska is going to hold Oklahoma to like 21 points. And I don't see a scenario where our offense is going to sit there and not score 30-some points. Like, I think we're going to need something in there to make a big play. And I don't know if Cam Taylor-Britt's it. If Oliver Martin's healthy, he's my punt returner. There's no doubt about it. But that is a big question mark.
All right, let's talk about Oklahoma here for a second. What does Oklahoma have that Nebraska should be afraid of? I mean, why would Oklahoma win this game?
Spencer Rattler. I mean, he is a Heisman candidate. He is a mobile quarterback who could throw the ball deep. He could be the first overall pick. I mean, he scares the shit. I mean, we won't play a quarterback like him the rest of the year. I mean, like,
yeah, you're right.
Big
Ten quarterbacks are shit this year.
Yeah, I mean, so. Right. I mean, the simple answer is Adrian Martinez. I am a big fan of. I will take Adrian Martinez head up against almost every quarterback we play the rest of the year. We are playing this game with a lesser quarterback. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
God, I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but think of the quarterbacks that we thought were actually going to be good this year. You know, Penix.
Mertz.
Mertz. Tanner Morgan. Yeah.
To be fair, Tyler and I never really bought into the Mertz hype.
But some people did.
But you know who the best Big Ten quarterback might be right now? Peyton Thorne.
Yeah.
That dude's tearing it up. Like, he's impressing me.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. Well, we'll be talking about them here in a little bit when we do our games of the week. But sticking with Oklahoma, another thing about Oklahoma is their kicker. That Gabe Berkich. I mean, he's got 4 50-yard field goals already through two games with a 56-yarder. All they have to do is basically get inside the 40-yard line, and they're damn near guaranteed points. That's how good that their kicker is. Just get inside the 40-yard line. So that stresses out the defense a lot. Because if you can't turn the ball over or allow them to get there, that just shortens the playing field. And if we get into a scenario where we get into a lot of three and outs, I mean, it could be like, death by like 1,000 paper cuts where, shoot, we could hold them to a three and out. But if it's a field position thing and it's on our side of the field, they still might get a field goal. Our punter, I mean, shoot, from the 40-yard line, we're not even guaranteed that he can even make it into the end zone with his punts. And they have a kicker that can kick field goals. So that is one huge advantage for Oklahoma.
Maybe. I just don't see this coming down to worrying about field goals. Where we need to be worried about, where Oklahoma beats us, is while we have a great secondary, they have some phenomenal receivers. Dude, Marvin Mims only has 6 catches this year, but he has 136 yards, averaging 22 yards a catch. Yeah. I mean, that guy's going to be tough to stop. I mean, he's going to be tough to shut down. And not only that, but they got Mario Williams, another wide receiver, has got 10 catches and 2 touchdowns. Jaden Hasselwood's got 2 touchdowns. They have 7 tight ends that have catches. Yeah. 7 different tight ends.
Well, and Derek, to that point, Quentin Newsome, and for that matter, Braxton Clark, when he's gotten snaps, I mean, like, I feel good about our safeties. I think our safeties have been great. I think Taylor Britt has proven enough and has played well enough this year. He's good. That other corner spot has not, I mean, been impressive. And you just wonder if Oklahoma has so many weapons that they can just pick on that corner that whole rest of the game.
Yeah. The secondaries, they are definitely going to be challenged in this game. I mean, this is going to be their biggest challenge probably of the year.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State's receivers are going to be great, but I just want to say, like, we'll get into predictions, but if Oklahoma scorches Nebraska's defense, like, don't ask me the question on Monday, do I think this can be a top 20 or 30 defense? Because I'm expecting this to be the worst our defense looks all year. Like, this game will not, like, this is not an indictment if Nebraska can't stop Oklahoma.
Is there any moral victories as far as the defense is concerned, like giving up a yard amount or score amount?
No, I don't. I think year four, there's. Where we want this team to be, there is no moral. I mean, sure, if we lose a game 14-17, and I mean, that would probably be a moral victory by the defense, I guess. But it's a pretty high bar what you need to do in a defeat for a moral victory.
Well, Tyler, how do you see this game panning out?
Well, unfortunately, I think you hit on it. I think we're going to get down early. I think Oklahoma is going to come out and they're going to get up 2 to 3 touchdowns going into halftime. I think Nebraska in the third quarter actually kind of gets a little spark, and you'll hear Joe Klatt talk about how this is a game, and I think there'll be a moment where we probably pull within one score in the third quarter, but Oklahoma pulls away late, and we just can't ultimately slow them down and generate enough offense.
Derek, how do you see this game playing out?
Well, how I see this game playing out is this is – I hate to say it, Nebraska Super Bowl at this point. We got nothing to lose. Look, here's the thing. If Oklahoma loses by or wins by 7 points or 14 points, it's going to look bad on them because they barely beat Nebraska, right? Like, this is Fordham for Oklahoma at this point. Ouch. Like, you can't barely beat Nebraska. You have to beat us bad. And I think if you're Scott Frost, you have to pull out the playbook. Like, there's no holding anything back. I want to see every gimmick play you can come up with, and I want to see every blitz you can come up with on defense. Do what you got to do to try and win this game. Try and keep it close. If you get burned on some blitzes, maybe you got to start backing off. But, you know, and if the gimmick plays aren't working. But what I see happening is you just go out and try to win this game. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to happen, but – You got to give it everything. Like, this is a no lose situation for Nebraska. The only thing that can make you look bad is losing by 40 points. That's the only thing that can make you look bad at this point.
So one of the things that I look in this game, and we already talked about, none of these players know anything about the rivalry between Nebraska and Oklahoma. You know, they're far too young for that. You know, parents and old fogies, you know, they're living vicariously through the players for this game, just for the nostalgia of the 70s and 80s, right? But what they do know, Oklahoma's players do know, is that Nebraska tried to get out of this game earlier in the spring. And I think that might be in the back of their minds. And there's probably going to be a lot of trash talking on the field. Nebraska starts off slow. And if they get behind, there's going to be a lot of trash talking. And Oklahoma's going to feed off of that, you know, telling those players, like, this is why your coach was trying to get you out of this game. And, you know, and it's just going to snowball. I don't see this ending in a good way for Nebraska, especially if there's injuries at the receiver and tight end. Our offense is already bad. Our offensive line is terrible. And the ability to score some points lies with one guy. We are one man, one deep, Adrian Martinez. You can throw Samori Toure if you want in there, but if he doesn't have any help, Tyler, you alluded to it, that's easy to shut down. You know, quarterback and safety help on the top, that doesn't really bode well for Nebraska in this one. And Nebraska's defense, yeah, I mean, we hope that they can get this going, keep us in the game. But we haven't faced an offense like what Oklahoma. Their receivers are huge, and they're very talented and fast. We struggled at times against early on, you know, in the games, in the first half of the previous three games, in the passing defense. This isn't going to end well for Nebraska. And
So Justin, I just want to say, so I know you talked about, like, Nebraska tried to get out of this game. Do you think that's at all, like, that hasn't really got brought up a lot, but if I'm the players, I, I don't know what motivates them, but if I'm hearing, you're scared of Oklahoma, you're scared. If I'm a player, I'm thinking, I ain't scared of Oklahoma. I mean, we've heard players allude to it, like Marquis Stepps, Maury Torrey. Like, this is why they came to Nebraska. Like, they came to Nebraska for this type of game. They may be dead wrong. They may should be scared of Oklahoma. But I'm telling you right now, they're sitting in their dorm rooms or in their apartments in Lincoln. They are not scared of Oklahoma.
No,
you're right. They've played this, you know, these teams have played Ohio States that have gone to the playoffs. They've played those big games. They're going to go in there, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have a chip on our shoulder. Again,
they're going to hear the trash talk. They will hear the trash talk on the field.
That's fine. I think Frost, I know the narrative is he was scared of Oklahoma, and again, he probably should be scared of them, yeah. But I think right now, again, I think there's a lot of chips on that shoulder. I would love for this podcast on Tuesday to be, can you believe what Nebraska did? I mean, because I wanted to leave you guys with this. If Nebraska wins, we know where the narrative on Frost is right now. Does it flip? Does the whole narrative on Scott Frost flip if he beats Oklahoma?
100% it does. Because now he would have achieved a signature win. Finally has a signature win. Beat a ranked opponent.
I disagree because I know Justin too well. And I think what it will turn into is, see, we should just go back to the Big 12.
Or just follow him to the SEC.
Yeah, let's go to the SEC.
Go to the SEC.
Like,
You can say that about me. But amongst Nebraska fans in the Nebraska land, that script changes. And nationally,
I think for some it does. Nationally, I think it definitely does. And I think for some it does. But I think there's still going to be homers out there that want Frost gone, like one on this podcast. And I don't think one win is going to change that. It's going to be, well, what do we do the rest of the year? Because if we don't win 7, 8, 9 games, like, look, if we beat Oklahoma, expectations change dramatically. And all of a sudden, you have to win 9 or 10 wins. Because 6 or 7 wins isn't enough because you just beat Oklahoma.
Does that scare you? Do those expectations scare you?
No. I think more the change. I think the narrative that changes is more the expectations than the narrative of whether or not we should get rid of Frost.
I mean, that's a great point, Derek. Because if we beat Oklahoma on Saturday, I mean, we'll get into the games of the week here shortly. But the Michigan State game, I mean, I think right now we're all a little butt puckered on because we don't know what Michigan State is. You know, there's obviously a lot of other games that scare us as the season goes on. Like, if you beat Oklahoma, I mean, you can't be looking at that schedule saying, like, our confidence rankings, like, immediately, like, every game goes up 2 points if we beat Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
Like, and so.
And that's just it. And then here's the thing. All it takes is to throw up a turd against Michigan State, and then somebody like Justin's right back on the, see, we just got lucky that game. Or whatever the case may be.
Or Oklahoma's not as good. Look what they did against Tulane. Yeah. Like,
look what they did against Tulane. I mean, and look, this staff is looking at every inch of film on Tulane to see what Tulane did to score 35 points on them. And I guarantee you they're going to try and exploit every possibility they can against Oklahoma.
Can they go to halftime before the game starts?
So you said you rewatched that. What did Tulane do to have success against Oklahoma?
So they were throwing the ball. They threw the ball in that game, and they were making plays. Oklahoma did not look like the same team offensively or defensively from that first half to the second half. We've had a lot of episodes here where we do the tale of two halves, right? This was a tale of two halves here. For Oklahoma,
I think that's going to have to happen a lot too. Like, we're going to have to get some quick passes. Like, they're going to pressure Adrian Martinez. They're going to, and they may not need to send extra guys to do it, but they're going to pressure him. So you're going to have to get some quick passes off. It's got to be some quick slants. Get some more Torrey the ball. I'm hoping we got some other guys that are healthy, whatever the case may be. But even Chris Hickman, like, get him the ball. He impressed me. He is probably the player. He's probably my biggest surprise of the season so far.
So Tulane had some mild success passing the ball in the first quarter. So they intercepted Spencer Rattler right off. You know, I think it was like first play, right? And they drove the field. It was like at midfield or something where they intercepted. But they got a touchdown there. And, you know, they did well, but by the end of the first quarter, Oklahoma had really settled in, and they just ramped it up. It was like, okay, they shook all the cobwebs off, and it looked like Oklahoma, the Oklahoma that we expected. But I'm telling you, they didn't seem to come out of the locker room in that second half. So shoot, maybe they're vulnerable in that way, and we get a break. Final thing for Oklahoma, let's get into our score predictions. Tyler?
Well, I kind of alluded to what I see the game playing out. I think Oklahoma gets up early. Nebraska makes it a game in the second half, but can't hold on. I'm going to go Oklahoma 42, Nebraska 21.
Derek?
I have it a little closer than that. I don't think Oklahoma necessarily gets up early on us. Not the way you guys do. Maybe they get a touchdown up on us. I don't see them getting 2 or 3 touchdowns. I think our defense is better than that. I like what our defense has done. I think we can pressure Spencer Rattler. I think we can cause him to make some mistakes. I think ultimately where it comes down to is the fourth quarter. I just don't think we have enough to hang with them by that time. I think they run away with it at that point. But I still see it being a fairly close game. I think it's 35-24, Oklahoma.
Wow. That's a moral victory to me. I like Oklahoma.
I think our defense is good enough that I don't think I just don't see Oklahoma scoring 42 points on us or 40 points on us. I don't. I think our defense is good enough to shut them down better than that.
Wait till Justin gives his score prediction.
Yeah, because
if you don't think 40 points.
Well, he's probably got him scoring 60, but
I almost had 79-0. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I just think with our offensive struggles, the thing that you don't want to do is have a lot of three and outs. And if we have as many guys that are going to be missing game due to injury, there's going to be a lot of three and outs. Field position is a huge thing in this game. And that's just going to shorten the field for an Oklahoma team that doesn't need it. I think they walk away with this game 51-21. So we will see. Hopefully it's more of a game like what Derek sees it.
Yeah.
It'll be a hell of a lot more entertaining.
I'm impressed with what our defense is doing. I don't think we give up that many points. I don't.
I do
think we struggle to score on them. I think we'll come up with some scores, but I can see where we could struggle to score. But I don't see our defense giving up that many points. I really don't.
All right, well, we're running late here, so we got to breeze through some games of the week picks here. Last week, I went 3-3. Tyler, you went 2-4, and Derek, you won with 4-2. So that puts me 7-5 on the season. Derek, you're 7-5 on the season, and Tyler, you're 6-6 on the season. So, real quick for our slate this week. Number 8, Cincinnati, 4-point favorites over Indiana. Tyler.
You know, it's funny. I thought Murray State gave Cincinnati a lot closer run for the money last week until afterwards I saw it. It was a close game in the halftime. I am not completely sold on what Cincinnati's going to be this year. I think Indiana does figure out something. I like Indiana in this game.
Derek.
Cincinnati has a great defense. They're only getting 10.5 points a game. And Michael Penix has just proven that he can't play well against good defenses. So I don't think he's going to play well against this defense. He doesn't seem to be, after that injury last year, he doesn't seem to be recovered. Desmond Ridder, the quarterback for Cincinnati, looks like the better quarterback. I think Cincinnati wins this game. I really do.
Yeah, before the year started, I thought Indiana was going to win this game, but what I see on the field on Saturdays really matters in how I think these games are going to play out, and Cincinnati gets the vote for me. This is going to be a fun game. Our opponent here in 2 weeks, Michigan State at number 24, Miami. Miami's 6.5-point favorites. Tyler.
Toughest game for me to predict this weekend. I went back and forth on this. In fact, I still didn't know which way I was going to go to start the podcast. I am going to go Miami. You know, Michigan State's been impressive. They've definitely shocked me a little bit, but their victory is against Youngstown State and a Northwestern team, which right now we have the worst team in the Big Ten. I'm not quite sold. Miami hasn't played well. I mean, it's really an interesting game, but I am going to go Miami with very little conviction.
Derek?
Man, I tell you what, Miami struggled against Appalachian State last weekend. I was high on Miami going into that Alabama game, and they've proven me completely wrong. I will never pick them again. Michigan State all the way. Peyton Thorne has looked like a good quarterback. He's got 5 touchdowns and no interceptions, throwing 65% of his passes. That guy's impressing me. I think he's the real deal, and I think he is going to tear up Miami's defense.
So before the season started, I had Michigan State picked over Miami. I'm sticking with that pick, Michigan State. Number 22, Auburn, at number 10, Penn State. Penn State, 6-point favorites. Tyler.
Yeah, I like Penn State in this game. I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, Iowa being the best team in the Big Ten. You know, what Penn State's defense did against Wisconsin was impressive. I know Graham Mertz were kind of mixed reviews on, but they looked really good against that game. I think that defense is right along Iowa is the best in the conference. I think that they hammer Auburn pretty well. I think they win by multiple touchdowns.
Derek.
You know, I think this is a tough game to call. Look, here's the thing. Auburn, this is impressive to me. Auburn is averaging 61 points per game on offense. They're only allowing 5 points per game on offense. Impressive. Unfortunately, they played Akron and Alabama State. Penn State's more tested. They played Wisconsin. They played a tough game. I think it's at Penn State. I got to go with Penn State here, but would not be shocked at all if Auburn comes in and wins this game.
Yeah, I'm going Penn State as well. This will be a close one. I would not bet the line. Number one, Alabama, 15.5-point favorites at number 11, Florida. Tyler?
I'm going to go Florida in this game.
What?
I know. This is a thing. I don't – very little conviction here also, but Alabama just doesn't always travel well on the road against ranked teams. And this being a true road game
– are there fans playing in this game?
Well, maybe. I don't know what the hell Florida does down there. We'll see what Bama does. Bama, I think right now, they are just riding this high after that Miami game. I think them going on the tested on actually their tough road game of the season, I actually like Florida for the upset here.
All right. That's bold. Derek.
So, interesting stat here. Florida's averaging 609.5 yards a game. That's right. I said it. 609.5 yards a game. Impressive. You're not doing that against Alabama. Emory Jones has 2 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. You can't make those mistakes against Alabama. I made a mistake going against Alabama in week one. I ain't doing it again. Alabama cruises.
Derek, you have become our Lee Corso, man. This is my favorite segment.
Not so fast, my friend.
Yeah, I'm taking Alabama here also. Tyler, you're foolish to go against St. Nick. So
I need to get that win back. I'm going on a limb there.
I think Tyler's really trying to play catch up, or he's really trying to secure last place this week.
Yeah,
because he's picking some odd picks.
Yeah. Who knows? All right, here's one that you guys can get from me: Minnesota at Colorado. Colorado's 2-point favorites here, Tyler.
Colorado took A&M to the limit. I know A&M's quarterback got banged up in that game, but Colorado took him to the limit. I think that right now Minnesota is one-dimensional. Tanner Morgan has been average. I don't want to say he's been a terrible quarterback. He's definitely in the middle of the pack of the Big Ten. I think Colorado's defense is good enough. They held A&M to 10 points last weekend. I don't think Minnesota is going to be able to run the ball like they did against whoever they played last week, that Miami of Ohio. And I think that ultimately Colorado runs away with this game.
Tyler or Derek?
I don't know if they run away with it, but I'll put this out there for you. They're only giving up 8.5 points a game. They only lost by 3 points to Texas A&M. But here's the interesting fact. Colorado's defense is only giving up 58 yards per game rushing. Like, right now, it appears the only thing Minnesota could do is run the ball. And if Colorado can shut that down, Minnesota is in trouble. Colorado does run the ball well. They got 226 yards per game. I think they control the clock. I think they do everything they need to do to beat Minnesota. And I think it's a good game. I don't think Colorado runs away with it, but Colorado will win.
Yeah, I'm taking Minnesota. I like their offense regardless. Tanner Morgan hasn't performed well so far, but I think he's still a pretty good quarterback. They're running the ball great. Yeah, their offense will get it done against Colorado. All right, guys, that is it for us. Any final thoughts here before we get out of here?
I'm already regretting my Florida pick.
Yep, I already wrote it down in ink. That ain't going anywhere. All right, guys, let's have a great game this weekend. Special thanks to our producer, Connor Russell, for putting this audio together for us. Be sure to follow the Husker Cuzcast on Twitter, at Husker Cuzcast. Like us on Facebook. Look for episodes anywhere you get your podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, and don't forget to rate, review, and share. On behalf of Derek and Tyler, we want to thank everybody for listening. As always, go Big Red. Frost. It's been a bit difficult, but he escapes. Now he throws.